This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR, Hollowell.
Good evening, everyone. It's nice to be here. It feels like we all just saw each other recently. some of us, anyway. I've been carrying that experience with me, I guess, since then. In the past 2 days, I've had meetings with students on usual interviews. And yesterday and today, two different people brought up something. Today someone said that she had signed up for the retreat, but she didn't actually come. Or maybe she came for one period or something. And I hadn't really paid attention to that fact, but when she mentioned it, I said, oh yeah, that's right, she wasn't there. And she said that she didn't come because she thought it would be too difficult. And so I asked her what that meant, if something was too difficult. Did that mean she was afraid of it? She was worried about it. And this is kind of a recurring story with her, so about meditation, about sitting. And so I was thinking about that. And someone else yesterday said how she was happy to see Joa developing and happy to hear about Joa's transmission, and but wondering how it was possible. Looking at Joa and saying, oh, you know, he's done this amazing path, and how could I ever do that, and how can anyone do it, it's not possible. And so we talked about that, what she meant by that, and what she expected from, what she imagined Joa's path was, or anyone else's path. And I said to her, well, you know, everyone has the potential to, because we were talking about Joa, to do what Joa is doing. And I said, that doesn't mean everyone has the potential to become a Zen teacher. But that's not what Joa's path illustrates, or my path, or anyone's path. What it illustrates is devoting yourself to this. And however that looks in each of our lives is different. And I thought, how could I see this different? And since I talked with her about it, you know, thinking about it and thinking about the other woman who said she felt it was too difficult, I thought about how at night when the Jikido chants, do not squander your life. And I thought, that's what it's about. And that is within reach of everyone. Do not squander your life. And that means don't hold back. So if she says, if the woman says it's too difficult, and basically when she was saying it's too difficult, it was afraid, she was expressing a fear that she wouldn't be able to do it, that she wouldn't be able to sit. And it's complete fantasy because she does sit. And she, there's no, you know, ultimately it's no problem. course, she has difficulty, she gets tired, she's bored, pain in her legs, whatever, but she does it. So she knows that ultimately it's not too difficult. But there's this residual fear of, I can't do it, I will fail. And so then she doesn't do it, which means that she fails. I mean, in her mind, she's failing by not doing it. And so it's this vicious circle of, I don't do it because I'm afraid that I will fail. And because I don't do it, then I fail. And I think we can recognize this in our lives and other stuff. We do this, the same kind of pattern. And so when I say don't hold back, that's something like don't limit yourselves with an idea about who you are, what it means to sit. I'm just giving a few examples. What your path is. The woman I spoke with yesterday said, yeah, you know, I don't come as often as I would like to. I do other things instead, and I feel like I'm taking steps backwards by doing that. And I said, you're not taking a step backwards. There are no forward or backward steps. It's just, those are the steps you're taking on your path. And at any moment, you can take other steps. You can take a step and sit. You can step, take a step and not sit, but it's not a forward or a backward step. It's just your path. And that's where you are on it. But it's so easy to be caught by these notions of progressing, obtaining, arriving. And as soon as we have that, then we have these notions of failure and success. So if we look at, you know, so this woman is looking at Joe and thinking he's accomplished something, and thinking that she has not. And it wasn't that she was jealous, it was that she just was thinking it's impossible for her. And it is impossible when we are thinking of it in terms of accomplishing and arriving, because we never will accomplish and we never will arrive. I was talking with my Dharma sister, Corinne, yesterday. Corinne Sensei. And she tonight was invited to participate in a Buddhist salon conversation online in Hamburg, in which the subject was failure. And so she knew about this for several weeks, and so she started thinking about it. And all of these examples kept coming up in her life of things she had failed at, and moments of failure. And I can't remember what some of the examples were, but one of them was that she, about 10 years ago, she decided she wanted to play the flute traversière, we say in French. And so she found a teacher and started taking private lessons, and she bought this beautiful flute, this rare Japanese flute that is, the mouthpiece is silver and the rest of it is silver plated or something. And she had this private teacher, and so for a few years she was taking these instructions and she really enjoyed it. But at one point the teacher started having panic attacks, not during her classes, but in his private life. And Corinne herself has struggled with panic attacks in her past. And so started talking to him about it. And soon the lessons became, Corinne was paying for the lesson, but in fact it became her helping him with his panic attacks. And he wanted to know more about Zen. And so she said, you know, like 3/4 of the time was talking and doing all of this, and 1/4 of the time was taking the lesson. So she just finally she was a young Zen teacher at the time, and it took her a while to figure out what was going on. And so she said, I have to stop this. You know, I'm not respecting the boundaries. We've switched roles. You know, we're not in the positions we're supposed to be in. He's supposed to be the teacher and I'm the student. And so she stopped. She stopped her lessons. And this was 4 years ago. And she hasn't touched the flute since. And when she started thinking about this notion of failure, she felt like this was a huge failure that she had dropped. She had so wanted to play the flute all her life and had finally started doing it and then stopped it. And she felt like she failed and had decided now to sell the flute. So she was going to meet the flute teacher again, because he has students who might be interested in buying the flute. And that's why this came up. We were talking about it yesterday. So I said to her, you know, I cited what Dogen had said about mistakes and failure. He said, life is one continuous mistake. And a true Zen master, his or her entire practice is one continuous mistake, one error after another. I've always been fascinated by that quote and sat with it and used it in terms in my writing practice, because in writing practice, I guess more so than in my Zen practice, I don't have a lot of confidence, and I'm constantly wondering if what I'm doing is right. And yet I know that if I don't know what I'm doing, then I'm doing it. But if I know what I'm doing, I'm probably not doing it. So that's where this notion of error and mistake comes in. And so if we think of our practice in those terms, instead of getting it right, doing it right, getting it perfect, we kind of know this in our Zen practice, right? In our koan practice, for those of you who work with koans. You have this koan, you sit with it, you work with it, talk to me about it, you present it, we work with it, go over it. I say no, you go back and struggle some more, and you come back and I say no, and you go back and struggle and come back and I say yes, and it's, oh wow, you had this big realization. And then I say, okay, move on to the next one. And you start all over again. So you never arrive, right? It's one continuous mistake, one continuous failure. You pass this koan, you get it, you have this glimpse of something, and then something else, and something else, and something else, and something else. Which is actually the story of life. It's one, each moment is new and fresh. And if we didn't let go of it, we wouldn't experience the next moment. Each moment is a mistake in the sense that it's complete as it is, but it's not the next moment. So the next moment is the next moment. And then we let go of that and it's the next moment. Now, did Corinne fail by stopping her flute lessons, her flute playing? Who knows? You know, it's how she experiences that's important. Why did she experience it as a failure? That's for her to look at. She thinks that she stopped because it was associated in her mind with this whole experience she had with the teacher. She could have found another teacher, right? Or tried to do it on her own. But it was associated in her mind, the whole story of her not being able to say no to the guy and then finally being able to say no and then moving on, and it just became in her mind fixed together and she stopped it. But maybe in that story, this was exactly what she needed to do. Maybe the flute you know, it really, she had her experience with the flute and that was enough. She could move on. Maybe the mistake was buying this amazing flute. You know, maybe if she had just had this ordinary flute that, you know, the bottom of the line, maybe it would have been different. But part of it was that it was such an extraordinary flute, I think. You know, this ancient Japanese flute with a silver mouthpiece. What if you don't play it well? You're not honoring the flute, do you think? You
know? Yeah, that must put some pressure on.
Absolutely, you know, it's an amazing thing. It's like people, you know, when we start writing practices, people buy these amazing, beautiful, rare notebooks with a fabulous fountain pen and this very special kind of ink, and they don't write, you know? I mean, yeah, maybe they do, but you can do it with just like, you know, an ordinary pen and an ordinary piece of paper. You don't need anything special. And there's added pressure when it's like this super precious paper that you're afraid to make a mistake on. So here's that word again, a mistake. And I'm seeing Tiago and I'm thinking of this wonderful practice of taking broken objects and restoring them, you know, and sometimes restoring them by enhancing the crack or the broken part, enhancing the mistake, not to make it something other than what it is, but to bring our attention to the beauty of it, to the thing as it is, that it's whole in its broken state. And when we say life is one continuous mistake, that's pointing to the imperfection of life and that it's perfectly imperfect. Someone asked me how my birthday was on Tuesday. And I said it was a perfectly perfect pandemic day birthday, you know, with all the limitations that entails. I couldn't go out to a restaurant and celebrate. I couldn't have friends over and celebrate. I don't know what else I would have done. Go to the cinema or something? I don't know. But it was perfect in what it was. I could appreciate it for what it was, thanks to all of my, you know, my practice. Probably even more so because I did a sitting retreat all weekend, you know, so I was grounded. And then when it was over at midnight, I just moved on, you know, just another day. It was actually just another day. But of course, it was my birthday and all kinds of people were wishing me happy birthday and phone calls and messages and, you know, all kinds of things that I responded to or didn't yet because I hadn't had time. And then each day is different. You know, another thing from Dogen, which I just wrote down today, actually, which I found. In the spring, cherry blossoms. In the summer, the cuckoo. In the autumn, the moon. And in the winter, the snow, clear, cold. It's just what it is every day. Today happens to be the 20th anniversary of the death of my father. It's just this today. The day before yesterday was my birthday. This is a very strange thing that I celebrate or that I have to notice every year, right? My birthday and then 2 days later, my father's death. So, but I honor each day as it is. I don't hold back. I don't squander any of the days. That's what we mean by do not squander your life. And I've noticed that in the chant, I noticed this during the weekend that when the Enos would chant, they would say, the opportunity is lost. But actually, there's no the in the phrase is opportunity. So it's opportunity, and it's not one opportunity. You know, it's not the opportunity. It's opportunity. All opportunity that you can think of. It's not one particular opportunity. And I don't know how this got into the vowels the way that we chant them. I'm going to have to look at the paper and see if it says that.
Actually, I noticed it when I was saying it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I wondered about that, and it's not there.
Lisa did it too, though. So I don't know where that came from. But anyway. This is what Do Not Squander Your Life is about. Do not squander opportunity. Opportunity at this moment to just be here with what is fully, to welcome it, to not hold back. I actually, one of the biggest experiences for me of not holding back was 20 years ago when I was spending my father's final days with him as he was dying. And not holding back. Not holding back from feeling what I was feeling. Not holding back from saying to him what I wanted to say or not say. Not holding back with silence. Not holding back with my brother and sisters and mother during that time. And I wasn't thinking of it in those terms, but because of my Zen practice, I think I intuitively I knew that. And intuitively I was able to do it because that's what I was training in my practice. Which means that I have no regrets. I felt it was just a seamless passage. Of course, I had deep emotions and I just cried and cried. And you know, I was by far the most emotional of my siblings around it. It was as if I was crying for all of us. And that was not intentional either. You know, I wasn't trying, but that's just what happened. And I didn't regret anything then, because I didn't hold back. And that was a real lesson for me going forward, to not hold back in any moment, whether it's some powerful emotional thing like that, but or if it's just you know, making breakfast, or I don't know, watching a football match, or listening to a song, or just whatever it is. Do not hold back. Don't hold back. When we say do not squander your wives in our practice, we're talking about that. We're also saying, I saw this from Joan Halifax recently, the Roshi in the US, in terms of don't hold back from engaging with the way of the Bodhisattva. Don't hold back from others. Don't hold back from being present to yourself and others. That's a more kind of Zen-ish approach, interpretation. But what I'm saying is too. Give yourself freely, generously to whatever you do. And that doesn't mean, you know, I think I made it clear to the two women I'm referring to who I spoke with, that it was not about that they had to be at the retreat all the time. That's not what it's about. It's about making it in part of your life, making your life this. So you give yourself entirely to your life. And that's how you realize, that's how you embody the Buddha way, as we say. Now, I don't know if Joa would use those same words about what his path is, but tomorrow, if you ask me, I might not use those same words too. But that's what it is. You know, he has put it, his life is this in whatever he does. You all too have moments like that. And you all too aspire to that in some way, or you wouldn't be here. And I'm not saying Joa has arrived anywhere. He's still doing the same thing you're doing. Moment to moment, one continuous mistake. You know, it's any different. That's about what I have to say. Comments, questions? Sharing, whatever. Joa?
Yeah, I feel mistakes and errors are, in a way, a catalyst of our expectations, or a mirror of our expectations. It's in the sense that it really, when we think that we made a mistake, we made an error, that also it translates into, we had a certain idea about how things were going to be, and it's not like that, and suddenly we feel, God, we failed. Today I had like one of these days where it was leaking everywhere, and I just didn't really manage to concentrate, and I felt like a complete failure for the entire day. And because I had that idea that I witnessed that the day before, and the day before, and the day before, it was like sense of very like was like very. And today it wasn't like that at all, and I felt, yeah, I failed. But it's also because I had that expectation when I woke up that the day would be kind of like the day before, where I was very efficient, very present, and it was just not that at all. So, and I thought, well, one of these days.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It doesn't feel good.
What?
And it doesn't feel good.
No.
And also, this is why, also, when I feel, I know the value of having a sense of collectedness. Because the day is experienced in a totally different way. And much more, feels much more. Much more wholesome.
Christine?
Yeah, it's very inspiring what you said. It talks to me, you know, one continuous mistake. I think we can all identify with that to some extent. I don't know who said that, but I heard somebody say, there is no mistake or there is no failure. Either I win or I learn. It was somebody, I don't know if it's somebody known has said that, which is a nice way to see it, because calling something a mistake is always our judgment of it's not the right thing, or it's not the way we expected it, like Joa said. And to just see those moments where we fail, as the opportunities to learn, to grow, to make something better. I try to adopt that for my path, to consider moments where I think, yeah, not as failure, but really steps where I can learn and where we can grow. So maybe another angle on that topic.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've heard that quote too. Just recently I heard it. I can't remember where. I don't remember where it was, but yeah.
Yeah, I heard it from a coach. It's something in the motivational business, which is used a lot, you know, to not, because I think we all have the tendency to judge ourselves and to make ourselves worse than others would, maybe, because we know ourselves more intimately and know our weak points. And and we all have the tendency to say, that was bad, you failed, you... And so to not, because it can limit to say something like that. It's a failure to judge ourselves as I will fail and then not do it at all. Like you said, the woman with the practice. But if you see it, well, either I win or I learn, it's not anymore such a big deal also to try something new, to do something you've never done. If you make this big thing out of it, either I fail or I win, it's much harder to do something new. But if you just say, well, we'll see what happens, and either I win or I learn, it's easier, let's say.
Yeah, and actually in the either I win or I learn, either way you win.
Yes.
It's a win-win situation.
Yes, yes.
It makes me remember of what Bernie was saying with his image of the yucky pile, the what the kids are doing with on their plates, and they say, "Oh, I don't like this. I do a little pile of things I don't like, and that's the yucky pile." And I feel there's a sense of, with the error, there's a sense of picking and choosing, having preferences about the outcome, about how the way things go. And so instead of integrating as a whole, we're making a little pile on the corner of our plate, the plate of our life. And it's like, that outcome I don't like, or that element I don't like. So the question, when I have that image of the yucky pile, I'm always thinking, well, the things we don't like need to go somewhere anyway. It's like we're throwing away garbages, but the garbage is actually going somewhere. It's not like we're getting rid of it. It's just going somewhere else. We don't see it, but it goes somewhere else. And it's being transformed, it is being put in the ground, but it never disappears, actually.
Yep. I think Debbie first raised her hand and then Joao.
Yeah, maybe it's just reiterating what Joao has been saying, but it's absolutely impossible to learn something new and not make a mistake. So if making a mistake or not getting it right is your criteria, then you always have to repeat the same experiences. You can't adventure into a new domain anywhere and think that you're gonna get it right for someone. That's just not real. When I was teaching, that was one of the things that we talked about a lot in the school that I was in, we talked a lot about learning skills and learning the process of learning. And that was one of the things, one of the kids came with that at one point and said, yeah, but you can't learn a new thing, right? You have to have the element of mistake in there or you won't learn it. You have to be able to pick and choose between which one works and which one doesn't. And then, as you were saying, as you all have been saying, it's fun and not, it's not a test anymore. You didn't not get your exam. You just had an experience. I'm doing this with cooking, and quite frankly, I'd rather get it right, because some of the things that I make are not very good. They don't come out in the way that I was hoping that they would. But I made something tonight that I kept hearing people talk about. And I could try to make that. It was kind of very medium, and I was kind of very disappointed. But I started off by saying, this may not come out. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to get in any case. So I didn't know what I was supposed to live up to. But it didn't live up to much, that's for sure. And so I started off by saying, okay, let's make this fun. Except that I'm hungry, of course, so there's a definite challenge in getting it right so that it tastes good. But it's, otherwise, we just repeat ourselves. We become a repetition of what we are. There's no way of being new.
Yeah, good point about growth and change and development. And yeah, absolutely. João?
Since you started talking, there were a couple of words in my mind. And when you use the expression, not holding anything back, it was exactly the same. The words were, I was looking back because I thought the book was there, but it's not there. And I really feel that I really want to share this with all of you. It's a dedication from Roshi in the Hidden Lamp, which was published a few years ago. And in the dedication, Amy Roshi, she talks about, I think that's why I was looking back. I wanted to make sure, but I think you talk about, you write something about the path of love. And then the final words, it's give it all away, which, and I haven't looked at that dedication for a long time, but I was amazed that the words, are here. And when you talked about not holding anything back, those words that had been on my mind since the beginning of the talk, they came together, and it feels like the same thing. You're talking about the same thing. Not holding anything back, give love and give all the love away, give it, not holding anything back. Not holding myself back, not each one of us, not become who we are, become who I am. And that was really another thing I would like to share. I spoke with Joa couple of days ago or yesterday, I'm not sure, and we were talking about the experience of the practice and the sitting with people, even, you know, during this year online, and at some point in passing he mentioned how good it is, because either before or after the sitting, I'm not sure, it doesn't matter, people get the time, you know, people want to, people ask, you know, how you're doing, you know, share something, you know, it's not just get there and it's time and sit and go away. And for some reason that was that stayed with me. And this morning I really felt I really felt different, a different approach from my part when I was sitting with some people online. Really going in the moment and really appreciating the moment for what it is and for what it can. I was going to say for what the moment can give us. It's not that. Really appreciate it fully. And we still that doesn't mean that before we didn't ask how we were doing, of course, but it the experience was different for me this morning. And there was even this funny joke, because someone had a funny name online and we were kind of wondering about the funny name. And we all had a good
laugh. You can say what it is, huh? I was the group idiot. My funny, name was group idiot.
Why?
Because I lent my computer to my son yesterday, and he did a Zoom with his friends, and one of the girls changed his name into L'Idiot du Groupe. And this morning I didn't see anything. And then Joe asked me if I would like to explain. And then only then I saw it. So it was quite a funny start in the meditation.
Yeah, it was funny, and we all had a good laugh, and a couple of people dedicated the sitting, as sometimes now we do, and we still sat, and it felt like this wholesome experience, like this full experience. This is the two things I would like to share with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, great. Well, during the retreat, we had someone who signed up as Arthur Schopenhauer. So we were very intrigued about that. And I told Lisa to check it out, just be sure it wasn't some fake thing, and it wasn't. But it was kind of like Christine's story, you know. So.
He actually sent an explanation finally.
Lisa told me.
And I saw this morning, because I think when the first person log in, I see who logs in. So I received an email. L'idiot du groupe has just joined the Zoom meeting. I was like, what? I was wondering if it was Arthur Schopenhauer who changed it to L'idiot du groupe.
I was thinking, yeah, Dostoevsky after Schopenhauer, yeah. But yeah, I mean, what's in a name after all, you know? Tiago?
Hi, hello. I'm just gonna say that I'm really happy to see you all again. It's been a while, and and failure, well, or mistakes, I've made a few. Just quite recently is just, I spent a few more weeks in Portugal than I was meant to for work. I planned 2 weeks of work and then returned to London, and I ended up staying 6 weeks because I misunderstood what the work was, basically. And there was that time that then I blamed everyone but myself. Then I started blaming just myself, and then I just had to let go of the blame, basically, and do the work, because I could feel like I almost like couldn't do the job because I was stuck into blaming. And yeah, when I saw that I was stuck there, then it just went. And I was, it doesn't mean I wasn't worried or angry, but it just wasn't stopping me doing what I had to do. And it was important to notice that, I think. So yeah, it is quite fitting that you're talking about mistakes today. Because yeah, it was important to hear. Thank you.
So you finished the job though?
Yes.
You did, okay.
Yeah.
And you're back in London?
And I'm back in London, yes.
Okay. In quarantine or?
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have these examples in our lives, right? I mean, it's really common. And we have the example of feeling the mistakes and all the emotions that come around it and the position we put ourselves in with that. And we also have the position of transcending that. I say transcending in the sense of not being stuck there and continuing on and doing what we need to do and learning. So.
Yeah, it makes me think of someone in our family, a dad who has two little girls, and their first daughter, when she went to school, at some point she began to have dreams that woke her up, and she slept not so good anymore, and she called her teacher a witch. And only now with her younger sister they understood that really this teacher was mistreating the children, that she was letting them cry in front of the whole class, and yeah, you know, a lot of stuff where immediately they took out their little one from this club, from the school, from the whole school. And now they understand why their older sister, the older girl, behaved like that. And the dad told me that he's so angry at himself for having not understood, and yeah, when I feel he really does not forgive himself, you know, for not having understood, and for this girl did the whole year with this teacher. And yeah, I mean, things like that happen, and the little girl, his girl who suffered from the teacher, okay, she suffered, but she surely would not want him to suffer for that now, you know, that he has not helped her, or I don't know why she couldn't talk about it in a way that the parents understood, because now they reacted immediately when they heard also from other parents what happened and in this classroom, and yeah, but it's um with ourselves. Often we are really harsh, you know, in he judges himself for having made this mistake. And I said to him, let go. Now it's over. And he has apologized to his girl for not having understood her cries and her and that now they can move on. But I really feel that he can't do that. It's something he can't forgive himself, and then it's a little, yeah, it's a pity, you know, for if you can't let go of the mistake you've done, and just you forgive yourself, you forgive the other, and it's okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe in a case like that, when we say, you know, if we can accept it and learn, as you said, it allows us to also look into ourselves and see where was I, who made that mistake, what was I attached to, who was attached to what, who was not paying attention. It's a real opportunity to look into oneself like that. Of course, it's not easy to do if you have no structure within which to do that, but it's possible to look into, you know, what, because with children, when we raise children, we know that we have those things that happen. We think we made a terrible mistake. And as Freud told a woman who came to see him about wondering how to raise her child, her son, he said, do whatever you think is best, do whatever you feel is right, because whatever you do, it will be a mistake. And that's liberating in a sense. No, it's like, okay. You know, so I look into myself and feel what's right and what I feel is appropriate for the situation, and I act from that, which is the same in raising children, but in what to cook for dinner, you know, or how to cook or whatever you do. Debbie?
I just hope that y'all's kids are in better shape than my dinner, that's all.
Yeah.
What did you say, Debbie? I didn't understand. You hope that the kids are?
I hope that your children are tastier than my dinner was.
But okay.
Yeah. The point of being able to forgive yourself, I think, is really, I'm stuck on a few things that I don't like about the way I acted in the last couple of years, and I'm not over berating myself yet, and I know it's really important, because you cannot forgive other people if you don't forgive yourself. It's really, you have to start there, or I have to start there in any case. And that when Tiago was talking about getting stuck in the self-reprimand, it can really be paralyzing in my case. If I get myself into a circle of not being able to be compassionate with myself, to say, as you were saying, not life is just a series of mistakes one after the other, then other people's mistakes fall into line and I'm less judgmental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I think maybe we can stop there. Not holding anything back.